Welcome back to Call Time with Katie Birnbaum. Thanks so much for listening to last week's episode featuring Claire Saunders and hopefully reading the accompanying article on Arts Journal. If there's one thing I hope you gleaned from both, it's her wide-ranging talent, and in keeping with that tradition, I'm thrilled to welcome to the show another multifaceted theater artist. I met Julia through my playwright friend Natalie, and I immediately thought to myself, I have to have her on. Julia is an actor, writer, and the co-founder and co-artistic director of The Hearth, a theater company dedicated to the stories of women and other underrepresented genders. You may be thinking, how does one person do all of that? And I have the same question. I'm sure we will attempt to answer it later. But included in there is the fact that she went to Kenyon College before moving to New York to perform in plays like Ransom, Extremely Gray Line, The Commons, Athena, and films like Noah Baumbach's Marriage Story and Zach Braff's upcoming A Good Person. In her capacity as founder and artistic director of The Hearth, Julia has overseen the production of new plays by, for, and about women, like Nurse Sluts, which Julia co-wrote, Baby Cakes, She Buried the Pistol, co-produced with La Jolla Playhouse, and most recently, Happy Life. I couldn't be more excited to talk to her about acting, about women, about producing, about sort of getting your hands dirty and doing the thing yourself. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Julia Greer. Welcome, Julia.
Hi, thanks. It's so good to be here.
I'm so happy you're here. And we were just chatting before we started recording. We're talking on what seems to be the first day of fall.
That it is breezy out there for the first time.
I know you were in
maybe a month.
You were in a full hoodie when we started
recording. That is true. I did. I busted out my sweatshirt. It's kind of fun. It's a fun phase.
It's such a fun phase to bring out the sweaters. Although I hope I don't have, I hope I don't have moths like I did last
winter. I know.
Winter.
Oh no.
Yeah, it was rough. My dry cleaning bill. But we'll pray for the best.
Different this year. Yeah.
It's a new year. It's a new dawn. Was there anything crucial I missed in your bio? I mean, I was looking at the Hearth website, I was looking at your website, looking at various articles. There's so much there and it's hard to cram it all in. And we're going to get to how you do all that. But is there anything major I should have touched upon?
No, I don't think so. That pretty much hit it.
Okay, good. Well, I want to start at the beginning before you get to all these amazing things you've accomplished. I actually don't know where you're from. Maybe I did at some point. Where are you from?
I'm from Richmond, Virginia.
And was theater and art always a part of your memory, or can you think of a light bulb moment you have with theater or a piece of art where you were like, that's what I want to do?
Yeah, I mean, I think I always loved it and gravitated towards it. My grandma was a choir teacher and a pianist, and I think she was the relative that I sort of saw most of myself in. And then I actually, when I was like probably 7, I saw a play at like a children's theater. And then I feel so old saying this, but I went into the newspaper and I saw that a theater was doing Annie. And I literally called the box office and was like, can I be in Annie? And they were like, absolutely not. It's already happening. But then they pointed me to this wonderful youth theater that I grew up doing ever since called Spark in Richmond that like truly became where I fell in love with all of it. And I loved it so much.
That's such a cute story. I love that. I love that you called the box office.
I was like, that's the number listed. Of course.
That's honestly a skill that Gen Z doesn't have. Like, I don't think all my Gen Z friends, sorry to like throw them under the bus right now, but they're like scared to call people on the phone. It would never occur to them to do something like that.
And to be going to the newspaper, you know, all those kind of millennial events.
Millennial and older. It's not. Yeah. It's not.
No, we're kind of the tail end of that, I feel.
So you start doing this community theater. I assume you're doing shows throughout high school. At that point, was it always just acting, or were you always interested in these other aspects of the making of theater as well?
I think when I look back on it, I mean, at the time I was like all in on acting, but I think when I look back on it, there are little signs that maybe I was going to become a producer, become kind of more involved in more aspects of it. Like I remember a friend and I who now works in TV development, and we both were in our spring play in high school, and we like approached the director because we didn't think he was marketing the play correctly in ways that like are crazy. But I think there are little things like that that I definitely cared a lot more about, kind of the holistic piece of the theater. And I think I didn't understand that as producing at the time, but I did care more than like just about the acting. And I think that sort of grew kind of the older I got and the more that I got to see different aspects of the theater.
Imagine you're like a 20-something directing a high school play to like get by, and these kids come up to you and they're like, "Your marketing is not sufficient."
Like, that's terrible, but
At the
who's
time,
that?
it's definitely a good strong sign. Your entry was Annie, but you're not a musical theater person.
I am not a musical theater
Yeah.
person.
So
I
how did
was growing
that
up.
growing up it was, and then when did plays become the thing?
I think I was just frankly like a better actor than I was singer, and I think singing just started to make me very anxious. And then Kenyon, where I ended up going to college, has a really strong theater program, but they don't do any musicals, and so I think it just sort of naturally became more focused on theater.
I was going to ask you about Kenyon. You wanted to be an actor, you had these other interests. What made you want to go to a liberal arts college like Kenyon?
I think I honestly was trying to convince myself that I didn't want to pursue theater, and so I was sort of like, I'll go to a place that has a great program, but I'm not going to go to a conservatory or get a BFA, and maybe I'll like become obsessed with political science. And that didn't totally happen at all. It kind of reinforced what
Always the
I
dream
wanted
to
to
be like,
do. I
actually,
know.
I love being a doctor.
I love to have a steady job with a steady income, but I think it ended up being a perfect place for me because I could do theater kind of intensely, but also still pursue other things and go to other classes and things like that.
Were you a theater major?
I was, yes, with an acting focus.
Got it, got it. And then, do people do theses at Kenyon? Did you have like a theater thesis?
Yeah, that was one of the greatest things about the program was that you got to do a full production of a play as your thesis that you got to pick. So Emma Miller and I, who started The Hearth, and we started kind of a baby version of The Hearth at Kenyon before we moved to New York, and we did our thesis together, and she directed and I acted in a play by Jonna Adams that was really intense, but it's really cool to be able to be 21 and get to do kind of your own play that you spearhead the process.
Absolutely. Tell me about this like baby, The Hearth, because I think one thing that I want to talk to you about and that I think is unique and rare is this quality of yours. I feel like most people, they want to act or even they want to produce and they're like, okay, well, here are the companies where I can do that. Here are the places where I can do that. And it seems like you from a very early age were like, well, I'll just make the company where I can do it. Was that by necessity? Was that just being like, we want to be more creative. How did that come to be?
Well, I think kind of a combination. It sort of started out of truly looking around and being like, why does the drama department only ever do Hamlet and Richard III? And there's so many amazing women on campus, and we are doing all these plays by men that feature men. And it kind of started from that sort of very basic impulse. And then I think we also felt like there were not that many contemporary plays being done on campus, and that's what we were more interested in. And so we sort of started by. We produced an original musical by a current student, and then we ended up producing. We were obsessed with the Kilroy's List, and we would produce and bring to campus plays that were newer and sort of newer out of New York and by younger women. And that I think we started to realize that we loved producing through that. And then I think Kenyon has such a dramaturgical focus and a script focus, and we both also loved the development and the dramaturgy element. And I think that's then what we honed in on with The Hearth was the new play and the developing from the ground up and kind of feeling like there's a certain specific lack of certain plays that we wanted to see and that we could kind of try to make them happen.
On the Hearth website, it says that the catalyzing moment was this 2015 study that the League of Professional Theater Women did that said that less than half of the jobs on any given production are held by women pretty consistently. But it sounds like you were already making that connection when you were in college and seeing sort of anecdotally and informally that theater departments were geared towards men, even though there were so many more women interested in it. So you were already making that connection in your head in college, and then you saw this study, or were you going into the professional world being like, we should continue doing what we've done in college?
I think, again, sort of a combination where we felt like this was such a problem at Kenyon. And then once we started investigating that problem, both very much just on the ground there, but also online, and sort of understanding what theater seasons were like in New York and in Chicago and places that we started to tap into and realize that it felt like a larger problem. And I think, I'm not sure I thought that the problems we saw at Kenyon would be true in New York, because it felt like it's this huge place with a million theaters. And kind of back to what you're saying earlier, like I don't know if we would have been as excited to start something if we didn't feel like there was a true need or a place that we could see ourselves that we didn't see other people producing what we wanted to be seeing. And I think that was such a key to how we were able to start The Hearth and kind of specify what we were interested in doing.
So when did you graduate from college?
2015.
Okay, so you graduated from Kenyon. You had already sort of had some experience in this much smaller context, both acting and doing dramaturgy and producing. And then what is that first year in New York like? Did you and Emma immediately start The Hearth, or were you sort of doing the normal pounding the pavement, auditioning, survival job thing? What was that like?
So we both actually got, there used to be a conference at Kenyon called the Kenyon Playwrights Conference, and there would be two seniors at the end of that would basically get a funded fellowship at some theater in the country or in London. And I got a fellowship at La Jolla Playhouse, and Emma got a fellowship at Playwrights Horizons. And then I had the dreamiest thing happen, which is that I worked there, and then they basically said, you can leave, your fellowship's over, or Paula Vogel's coming to town, and would you like to be her assistant for a couple weeks? And I said, absolutely, I will stay and do that. And then we just really got along, and when that play moved to New York, I moved with it and ended up doing Indecent in La Jolla.
Oh my God. I had no
off idea. Broadway and Broadway. Yeah. So I ended up, and that was like, I mean, it was kind of an unfairly dreamy way to enter New York theater, because it was with these incredible powerhouse women in this unbelievable play that I am just still truly obsessed with. I watched it probably 200 times, and I could watch it again tomorrow. And then Emma ended up getting her fellowship turned into a casting assistant job at Playwrights Horizons, and we sort of found ourselves here and in these communities that we had never even dreamed of being in really fast. And then we're still also doing the pounding the pavement auditioning. And then we basically worked a long time on our mission statement and felt like we needed to really hone in on what exactly we wanted to do. And then with that, and we like announced the first show that we were going to do as kind of our first Hearth moment. And that was, I think we both lived here for about 6 or 7 months.
What was the first show?
It was called For Annie by Beth Hyland.
Oh, I saw that on the website. Yeah. Wow. My friend Billy from college is doing a production of Indecent at San Francisco Playhouse right now. Because of the time difference, basically every morning I wake up to a late night text from him being like, this play is so amazing, or like sending me an article about like random Jewish stuff that I don't even know as a Jewish person. Yeah. I'm so jealous. Wow. It seems like
the best.
So much of your professional life is based on this really fundamental friendship and collaboration with Emma. Was that a happy accident? Do you like, you know, having a partner rather than it just being you? How did you navigate that?
I really prefer to do it with someone else. I can do it alone, I think, but it's really, Emma and I just really, I think, aesthetically have so much in common. We are interested in the same kind of plays and the same kind of mission. And we, I think, really complement each other skill-wise. And so I think it just sort of ended up, and it was really amazing to be able to practice that in a lower stakes college way. And then we both sort of realized that we were good at it and good at it together and cared about the same things. And I think it just ended up being a really happy thing that we also both ended up in New York. We didn't know that that was a guarantee. And so once that all happened, it made a lot of sense.
Am I correct in thinking that she's sort of the director side of the pair and you're like the acting writing side of the pair?
Yeah.
And you say that you had this common aesthetic. I really think that young actors, theater makers should be looking for their peers that they have these like common missions and common aesthetics. But how does one do that? Like, how would you describe, is it like seeing a work that they've, piece that they've done and being like, wow, I really liked that? Because sometimes you see pieces and you're like, I really liked that, but it's not me or not my style. Mm-hmm. So how do you identify that common piece, that common thread?
I mean, I think we got incredibly lucky, which is that we literally took the same classes. We, the first play that I was in at Kenyon in the freshman theater company, she directed it and was the first person to cast me. You know, I think there's so much that we, and we both did the O'Neill together and went to NTI. And I think we have such an extremely similar foundation that it's never felt hard. And I think I also, it would be really hard to make a company and sustain a company with someone that you don't know as much about, kind of, is how I feel. Like, I think it is so hard to find someone, and it is. And we also have been very purposeful to really keep it just us in all the meaningful ways, because I think a lot of young companies sometimes expand out too fast and too far, and there's just inevitably disappointment in that, and people that aren't as interested or aren't doing what they say they're doing or have other interests and get taken away. And I think we've just been very, very purposeful about keeping it pretty close.
Yeah, it seems like you have a common training, but also like a common language. And that's really interesting about keeping it close. On that subject, the practicalities, I think a lot of people have the idea like, oh, I wanna produce my own theater. I wanna make my own company. How does one even go about setting up, you know, a 501c3? Like, how did you guys go about that?
So we still aren't officially a 501c3. We're sponsored by Fractured Atlas. I think we very soon probably will transition to that. We literally went to the courthouse and got registered as an LLC, which was a really kind of funny event. I think it becomes easier and easier, but at the beginning it was truly like scouring the internet for literal space in the city, and we cast a lot of our friends and people that other people introduced us to, and our first play was kind of site specific in a yoga studio because that was cheap and we could make the play make sense there, and there was just so much about the early stuff that we were just learning how to do it, I think, in a lot of ways. And every show we've kind of upped some element, which I think has been really exciting and has made it feel like we're always progressing forward. But I think at the beginning it was so much about just like, let's just make this happen and invite everyone we know and message a random girl from high school that I know lives in New York that I haven't talked to in 4 years because I need to fill the seats and we just need to kind of make something happen. And we were pretty crazy about it, but I think it ended up paying off. And then I think once you just meet more people and learn more about the ecosystem, it just becomes a little easier.
I'm sure you still feel scrappy in that way that it started at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We are quite a scrappy group, I would say.
What would you say are your biggest challenges now running the Hearth?
I think money always feels hard, obviously. I think wanting to pay people fairly is such a hard thing because it's obviously what I would love to do, but then it can be so hard when you're working on these small budgets and when everything in New York just costs a little more and everything after COVID feels like it costs a little more. But I think, I mean, in a lot of ways, it's just meeting people and finding more people to work with and things to do or plays to do. But I think where we are right now is not totally knowing how to both keep it small and keep it what it has always been and make it, have it grow in a way that feels exciting without it growing too far and fast. Because I think it's also, she directs and I act, and it's not, our full-time job isn't being administrators for this company. So it's also kind of trying to figure out how to both expand and grow the company without it getting out of our reach, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. And that's what I was going to ask next. Well, two things. First, I was going to ask how you balance these two sort of callings, one being acting and performing, and the other being running this company. And then, two, it seems like this company is very scrappy, very devoted to the off-Broadway scene, contemporary, new work. And so my question there is, do you have any desire for it to become mainstream? What's your relationship to that word when it comes to the company? So I'm curious about both of those things. Big questions, both.
The first, I think part of what's been really great about it is that they've fed each other, right? Like I've been in a lot of the plays that we've done, and I feel like as a young actor in New York, it's really an incredible opportunity to get to have a writer who writes with you in mind, and you also get to play the parts that you're not getting cast to play and that you want to show the world that is what you want to do. And I feel very lucky to have gotten to act. And I think Emma's an amazing director, and it's been really fun to kind of feel artistically satisfied by the company, as well as helping others and presenting people's work. I think that's just a question that we're always sort of trying to figure out. I think it's helpful. We don't really have like an operating budget. Like we don't have a space, we don't have an office, we don't have anyone on a payroll really. And so we really scale up when we do shows or when we do a workshop for a week, but we really otherwise have very minimal sort of responsibilities besides like the grant writing and the meetings and that kind of stuff that comes with a small company. But it is helpful that when we're not in production, we don't have that much to answer to, if that makes sense. But I imagine that will always be sort of a push and pull. And hopefully, as our careers both diverge from each other and are in different places, that one of us will be able to hold down the fort or will be able to expand in a way that won't impede what we want to do otherwise. But it's also just such an important part of both of our lives. I can't imagine not having space for it.
Yeah.
And then, wait, what was the second question?
It was about
Oh, a
being part of this
mainstream.
off-Broadway scene and doing these new plays. And it seems to me that there's this inherent contradiction in running one of those companies in that you want to stay scrappy, you want to stay cutting edge, you want to stay in your community. But at the same time, if you keep scaling up and keep getting better and keep getting good notices, it becomes more and more mainstream by virtue of that. So, what's your vision for that future?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I'm not married to it living in any sort of specific sphere of New York theater, but I think I never want to choose programming based on something that's not just a love for a play and a writer. And I think as long as that's the guiding principle, I feel comfortable with wherever that falls. But when I think about what I want for the company, I think about a play like Athena, which we did a few years ago that has been published, and people do it in high schools and colleges and all over in regional theaters. And
Wow, that's
that's when I
great.
feel so good about what we're doing. And I'm like, if I can give some 13-year-old girl in some random city a meaningful part in a play written by a young woman about what it is to be a young woman, I think that kind of exposure for people is truly something I care about a lot. I really want our plays to keep kind of going beyond the New York sphere. And so I think as much as I don't want to sell out in any way, which I don't necessarily think mainstream is selling out, but I do think there is a benefit to having a little more attention in just the way also a play can affect more people than just yourself or just the small group of people that sees it.
That's awesome. What is Athena about?
Athena is about two fencers in high school, competitive fencers who train together, but kind of the crux of their relationship is that they're both getting better against each other, but that fencing is a solo sport. And so what do you do with that sort of friendship and competition and growing up and being really competitive and trying to figure out who you are? It's by Gracie Gardner, and it's a very special play and process.
That sounds amazing. I loved reading and researching about the works that you've done because, well, I'm of course a woman, but also like a woman who has always gravitated artistically to work about women and women's relationships with one another. And I've always found in literature and in the arts, there, as you said, there isn't much analysis of it. There isn't much art to begin with.
Mm-mm.
Do you think that that is changing, like even in the span of your time working and founding The Hearth? Do you think it's changing?
It's really hard to say. I mean, I put it this way, I do feel still like we are filling some sort of gap, that it still exists in a way. I think that things have changed, but I think there's always room for it to be better. And also, I think there's always a slot in a season for an established white man. And I don't think that's true for any other demographic still. And I think I care so much about women's stories being as plentiful as men's stories. And so I feel like even if there has been some needle moving, it hasn't moved quite enough. And I think women, even if there's some exposure or some success, that it ends up then a lot of the same women get the same opportunities. And I think the net just needs to be a little bit wider.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. To that extent, The Hearth seems to work exclusively with new work.
Mm-hmm.
And you, by extension, as an actor, do a lot of new work and contemporary work. Is that part and parcel of the mission for you? As an actor, are you interested in doing older classics as well? Or is your interest just like, I want to do new and contemporary art?
I feel definitely interested in classics. I feel like I haven't pursued it in the same way because I just think it has all made more sense to be a new work person with the company. And I love the development stages of scripts and being part of those early workshops, and I love when plays change, and being a part of that process is something I really enjoy. So I feel like that's partially why I gravitate towards new work, but I also really love and appreciate older plays, and it just hasn't been, I think, what my focus has been so far, but I hope that doesn't always stay true.
Well, you've worked, I saw, as a script supervisor or helping script supervise as well, and as you say, Kenyon had this intense dramaturgy aspect, and I saw you also co-wrote one of the plays that The Hearth did. So where does writing and this like literary element come into all of your career and passion?
Yeah, I think it's a piece of it that I've sort of avoided for a long, or I don't know if avoided is the right word. I think I just, when I was younger, I was like, I'm an actor. That's what I am. And I think I sort of pushed away that I do love writing and I like to write. And I think that's a piece of my life that I want to give more time to. And I think working for all these writers was a really incredible exposure to people's processes and the fun of being a writer in a room and how exciting that can be. I don't see a world where I would write a play that like The Hearth would do fully necessarily, but it sort of all feels like the same brain space of developing and being a dramaturg in the room with creating my own writing opportunities and writing for myself and stuff like that. But I feel like the writing piece for me is a little bit newer and a little less, I feel like I pursued it in a less intense way, but I really love doing it.
Well, something about the development process of a new work is that everyone's jobs are less delineated, right? Like if you're doing, you know, like A Doll's House, the director is putting the text up and the actor knows what they're supposed to do. Everything gets sort of mushed together when you're developing a new piece. And some people really don't like that because it blurs everything. But I really love that element. And it sounds like you get to use all the different parts of your brain to put this piece up. And it's also, even though it's new work, it's more in an older tradition, kind of like a repertory tradition where everyone just sort of like pitches in to make the play the best that it can be and put it up, and there you go.
Yeah, and that's a fun, I love that about wearing multiple hats when you can both come at it from the acting angle and then talk to the playwright after and have an idea about the script or be in a design meeting and not take it all over, but just sort of be a part of multiple pieces of the process. And especially because I think we often are doing people's first productions or first plays. And so it's, I really love being a part of all of that for someone. And I don't feel particularly super experienced, but I do feel often like I've been in those rooms more than the playwrights have that we produce. And so it feels really fun to be able to kind of get to be a part of all of that for them.
So what do you look for when you're looking for a piece for the hearth, or even if you like dream world are deciding like what show should I act in next? Like what are you looking for in a play?
I think a huge piece is that getting along with the writer, honestly, and having a connection in a way that feels like you can have a dialogue is a huge thing. And caring about the same sort of base theme or idea or impetus for the play. I think when we first started the company, we thought, like, oh, we're going to get a million scripts. They're going to be exactly what we want, and we'll just program them. And then I think we zeroed in that maybe what we're after is something a little more specific than we thought. I really love plays about women that are like messy and complicated and aren't kind of the stereotypical renderings of them. I think we talk a lot about women without being introduced in the context of a man and how their lives can be so full without needing to contextualize it that way. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but I think there's less of that theater in the world. I just love plays that are about complicated people and are kind of messy and a little weird, but dramaturgically sound and with a playwright who's down to edit and down to kind of get in the sandbox in that way. But I like things that are a little off center and a little bit sort of more complicated.
I love that description. And so when you started The Hearth and also now, I know you said you scale up for every production and then sort of scale back down when you're not doing one, and then that you have to make these difficult choices when you're programming. Is there like a plan every year where you're like, okay, we're going to do X number of shows this year and X number of workshops? Or is it sort of like, depending on the year, we're interested in, you know, three plays this year, but this year we're only interested in one play. And obviously there was COVID, but speaking normally.
What is normally now? We don't totally have a plan. I think we like to try to do a play a year at least. Right now we just did a play in July and we're doing one in December and we'll do another one in March. So we're kind of,
That's a
this is the
lot.
most programming we've ever done by a long shot. But I think it's really, I feel like in New York, it's so space dependent, right? It's like, is there a theater that has space that you want to produce in? Is there certain grants or certain timelines? And it is all sort of in flux in that way. But I think I would like to be in a place, I think producing two a year would be a really amazing thing. It's kind of a lot for a small company, but I feel like there's just more that I want to produce and develop. And so it feels like that space is a nice space to live in. And then you get to work with more people and involve more people. But it sort of all depends on what's available and who's available and if there's something that's exciting and all of that stuff has to align.
How do you, Julia, balance all of these different things that you have to do in your professional life?
It's hard.
Well,
I
I
don't
guess my
even
question
know.
is like, I assume when The Hearth is producing a play, you're sort of in that. And then the times when it's not, you can be more in like Julia actor mode. That's what I assume, but correct me if I'm wrong.
No, that's definitely true. I'm lucky I have managers who really are cool and love the company, and so I do sort of scale up auditions and stuff like that when I'm not doing a Hearth show. And I think honestly, sometimes it's more the Hearth is not such a lucrative business for me personally. And so I
Really?
feel like, yeah, it's not shocking a theater company that's not swimming in money. But so it's honestly, I find it harder to balance like money day jobs than I do to balance acting and the hearth because
Well, I
that
was going to
stuff
ask
comes
if you have
yeah.
day jobs still.
Oh, absolutely,
What
yes.
are your day jobs?
I used to be an assistant. I would do those script supervisor and assisting jobs, and I was an assistant to an old actor for a long time. And yeah, it was kind of wild, but that was like years. That was truly took me up until the pandemic. I was always assisting and sometimes babysitting, but then the assisting sort of started to drive me a little bit crazy, and I felt like it was too much to be beholden to other people's schedules when I also was beholden to the hearth. I just felt like I wasn't my own person sometimes, and so I made the sort of leap to have a more traditional, like now I work at a restaurant and it's less fun to say to your like aunt that you work at a restaurant than you assist a fancy person, but I think it's better for my whole self to sort of do a job that I can leave at the door.
That's a good way of describing it. It's a very good way of describing it. Wow, yeah. But you don't have to answer this if you don't want. Do you pay yourself for your work at the hearth or no?
Depending, not all the time, but like this summer, we produced this show that ended up being huge and it was much bigger, I think, than anyone anticipated. And I spent truly every waking minute producing it. And at that point, I kind of was like, I have no option but to pay myself. But if there's other times where I have more money coming in different ways, it's not always something that I pay myself to do. Because then sometimes it's like looking at whether would I rather pay myself or would I rather not have to fundraise those few hundred dollars, and sometimes that wins out.
Totally, totally. Yeah, speaking of fundraising, I mean, it sounds like it's just you guys, so you have to do the fundraising. Is that mostly grant writing, which you mentioned, or is it also campaigns where you ask rich people you know to give money?
Both, definitely. We've always done, which I would recommend to anyone, is that we write a letter and send it off in the mail to pretty much every adult with money that we've ever met. And that has truly been the bulk of the money that we've gotten, has been from those letter writing campaigns. And then we also apply for grants and have gotten more and more grants. I would say this last year we finally started to get some, but it took a while.
Well, yeah, what they say, not having worked in development, but being in school for it now, or part of it, people say that the first time you apply for grants, you're never going to get it. It's just about the place knowing who you are. And then it's about showing them like a couple years of consistency, and then you may start to get money, which is, unfortunate, but how the world works, I
I
guess.
know it's so hard out there.
It's hard out there, but it's so like, I'm just so impressed. I think the mission is amazing, and you're just doing so many different things. One of the other things, you've also worked on camera yourself as an actor, and also done script supervision work for film people, like someone like Cameron Crowe. You seem like a theater person, like that's where your heart lies. How did you come to the camera, and do you approach it differently? Do you like it as much?
I have interest in film and TV. I really love it. I think I fe it feels to me in an acting sense like somewhat like this thing I've always loved and I've always known how to do, and someone is like, "Oh, you can do it over here in a totally different way and learn it in a new way." And that has felt really exciting and fun. And I made a short film last summer that I wrote with my writing partner, Julia Weinberg,
You
an
are a
alternate.
writer. I can't believe you just gave an answer where you were like, I'm not a writer. And then you were like, I have a writing partner and I wrote a film.
a short film, a short film.
Sure. Still a film.
No, it's still a film, but I really loved that aspect, and I loved kind of the piece I liked about that too is like you get to edit in the moment and you get to do a bunch of takes that are different versions of something that I feel like in theater you have to sort of lock in before you do that and then you lock it in. And this was cool to be able to do that in real time. But and I worked for Cameron Crowe, but I worked for him on a musical. So he was turning Almost Famous into the musical Almost
The
Famous.
Broadway show
The
that's
Broadway
coming
show
to
coming
Broadway.
soon.
I have
Yeah.
many friends in that show, so I will be seeing it.
It's a fun time, I think.
So you are also are a musical theater person.
That was like after Indecent doing that job for Paula, it was sort of then the producing office was like, come do it over here. And so I got involved more in musicals in that way. But not in a performing way.
Could you see The Hearth ever doing a musical?
Oh yeah, I would love to do a musical. It feels like that takes so many more resources. Like I think we would need to do it with someone else
Yeah,
because
it's
I
very
really,
expensive.
yeah. But we've been developing this musical forever that I hope one day sees the light of day about a pole dancing class of women, and I think that would be really fun to do something like that.
That's so fun. I feel like a lot of
And
people do it
then,
for like bachelorette parties and stuff. It's become
yeah.
like the thing. That's so fun. Who's writing it?
This woman named Megan Dobkin, she's an LA-based person. She went to Kenyon years and years ago, and we met her through an alumni thing and started working on it while we were still in college. But it's sort of been, I think it's something that's like always just on her mind that when we pop in and work on it sometimes, but it's really fun. And I would love to do a musical. I just think it just takes so
Yeah.
many more resources.
Yeah. Well, once you're swimming in the grant money dough,
Exactly. We'll
you
put off a
can start.
musical.
Exactly. I feel like we've sort of been dancing around this question for a while. Do you have any personal goals for the coming years, acting wise, hearth wise, anything?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to break in more as an actor into more of the like establishment theaters and their workshops and shows, and definitely like film and TV I want to do more of. I really feel like I've had a little taste of it and I love it and I would like to do it more. And then the company, I kind of just want to sort of keep doing what we're doing, but maybe with a little more help and a little larger scale and being able to pay people more and being less stressed about money, which I'm sure never goes away. But doing Happy Life this summer was the first time we had a play that I wasn't in and Emma didn't direct, and was with like a totally new team of people that we'd never worked with before. And I think that was a really cool experience. And part of what I would love about doing two shows a year is to have one show where we like bring in a whole team of people, and then maybe one show where we're more artistically involved, just so we can work with more types of people and a wider range of talent and people in the city.
Yeah, it's like spreading the wealth, but it's also allowing, I assume the shows where you are artistically involved and producing, that is your whole life.
Yeah.
And I'm sure when you're producing, it sounds like Happy Life producing was really intense and it was also sort of your whole life. But in a dream with a little more resources, probably it would be able to give you a little bit of a life outside of just producing the show.
Yeah, and I think I also wouldn't. I mean, in my dream for my life, it's like going away to do theater or going away to do a movie or something. And I also wouldn't, I would want there to be able to be enough in place that that wouldn't derail what we were
Right,
doing.
right. Like we can't go on. Yeah, that makes
Yeah.
total sense. Again, I think the mission is so important. And as I said, I don't know if maybe I told you this when we had drinks with Natalie, but I was an English major in college and my thesis was about Jane Austen novels, but it was about love triangles and how they're really about like the two women.
Oh, you didn't tell me that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was fun. And then my theater thesis was also about women, like women in musicals, but still women and how they interact. So if you are someone like me who is interested in this topic and work that The Hearth does, are there things you think that we can do to make a difference in the industry? Or is it just a matter of making our own things?
I think both, always. I think there's always, I think people who are in hiring positions or decision makers, I think there's always room within organizations for there to be change. But also, we try to hire as many like women and trans and non-binary designers and stage managers, is just the more that people are working and the more credit they have on their resume and the more they've been in the rooms, the more they'll be hired later. And I think it takes a lot more for people to take a chance on women a lot of times, and people of underrepresented genders. And so I think just giving people those sort of opportunities feels important. And that's how I've always believed that you can make a change in the industry. And by making also work that feels viable, that is about women, honestly.
Yeah, I agree. I think what you said earlier, and I think it says this on the Hearth website too, that we're in an industry, maybe not so much with actors or even directors, but we're in an industry where people hire the people that they know and people they've worked with before.
Yeah.
And you know, we get that clearly because so much of making work is about the vibe. And if you like the person and you know they can do a good job, like, why not hire them again? But it's clearly a barrier, especially in those jobs in the theater that people don't really think about, like tech jobs and crew and things like that. Clearly a huge barrier to entry. I did the dramaturgy for the National Tour of Annie that is happening right now. And
incredible.
It was the first room I was in where every single person on the creative team, with the exception of the costume designer, was a woman.
Wow.
And that's never happened to me before, ever. Every assistant was a woman, just like everyone was a woman. And that was like, and it was kind of cool because it was Annie. Like, of course, it's a show about a woman, but you don't necessarily think Annie and think like girl power. Maybe you do. I don't know.
I think you do. I think that's so cool. I know I do feel like I have sometimes actually the opposite experience, which is that I've crafted my life to be so many women in a room that sometimes I'll be in other, on other projects that are so male dominated. And I'm like, oh, this is actually what most people experience all the time. But for me, it's very jarring. And the energy is so different. And I think it's so underestimated too how much having like a woman designer brings a sensibility that is particularly female or particularly them, that I think it, I think people underestimate how much that can affect a process and affect a whole play.
Absolutely. And I think that's true beyond the gender issue, true of race and ethnicity,
like any representation.
Representation. I think the only ways we solve it is companies like The Hearth and people making their own work and mentorship and networks, honestly. Mm-hmm. Sounds like Paula Vogel was super important in your life too. So great to have like
absolutely
an older, not older.
It's like the OG mentor. Yeah.
Exactly. On that subject, my last question before a fun little ending segment. Do you have any advice for the aspiring actor who may be listening, the aspiring producer who may be listening, and especially female or underrepresented gender person of those people who may be listening?
I think just try to see as many things as you can and find the people that you connect with, and don't be afraid to write them emails and tell them you love what they do and meet people in that way. And I think if you're going to produce something, you should care a lot about it and feel like it is not being done somewhere else. And then I think go for it always. And I think for all of it and as an actor and everything, it's just so much about time and spending time doing it and pursuing it. And it takes a long time, and that is okay.
Yeah. I think we're living in an age, particularly as actors, where it used to be like, oh, you work up the ranks, you understudy and you do summer stock and you audition and you do this for years and you do off Broadway. And then eventually 10 years later, you get Broadway or whatever. And I think that's still true to some extent, but there is a growing wave of people who like do the Jimmy Awards and then immediately get cast on Broadway.
Yeah.
And I think that's great. But I also think it creates expectations that the path is immediate and that if it's not immediate, it's not something you're meant to do. And I think that's very good advice, that it takes a long time and it takes work and hard work. I have a silly question that I just have to ask that I didn't plan, which is like, I'm really trying to wrap my head around it. You do so much. You have a day job, you do The Hearth, you're acting, you're auditioning. Do you have time to like watch TV?
Oh yeah, definitely.
I just wanted to make sure. TV is like the most important thing in life. So.
Oh my gosh, I could not not watch TV. Okay, absolutely. Good.
I just had to clarify that to bring everyone back. My ending segment is the Thank You Five segment, like Thank You Five to Places, and it's five rapid fire questions. It's a lot of favorites, which a lot of people don't love. So you can always say a couple if you can't think of one.
Okay.
So first, do you have a favorite feminist piece of theater? and your definition of feminist can be your own.
That's a great. The first, I'm just going to say what comes to mind, because otherwise I'm going to get way bogged down in my favorite rankings. I really think that Fefu and Her Friends by Maria Irene Fernandez is, I think that was like the first play I discovered that had a different structure and had all this feminist stuff going on. I think that is more than just what was on the page, but how it was made and how it's in the world. And I think that was like just a hugely eye-opening play for me.
Incredible. I very much recommend people listening to read it or see it if you can. What is one up-and-coming female playwright about whom you think we should know?
I'll do a little plug for our upcoming play. Bailey Williams wrote the play that we're about to do at The Brick in December, and I think she's really amazing and hilarious and a super singular voice, and I think people will know about who she is soon, and she's awesome.
What's the play? What's it called?
It's called Events.
And what's it about?
It's about a high-end event company who is planning an event while also processing some grief, I would say, is kind of my loose pitch for it. It's a hard play to pitch because it's very complicated, but in a fun way.
Love it. Well, we'll have to stay tuned and I'll go see it in December.
Yeah, I can. Yeah.
What is the worst and the best thing about running your own theater company?
For me, the worst is anything with money and budgets and contracts. The best thing, I think, is being able to hire people and give people opportunities that they're excited about and don't otherwise have.
That's very sweet and selfless. Do you have any dream role? If you don't like that question, you can answer, do you have any favorite roles you've played?
Dream roles are hard for me because it's like I feel like I operate so in the new play space that I'm like, I don't know what exists. What don't exist yet?
It's been written yet.
I know, that's kind of how I feel. I really, really loved playing Athena in Athena. That was very special. Actually, I do have an answer to this, which is that I played the baker's wife in high school in Sondheim, Into the Woods, obviously. And I would like love to do that as an adult.
Have you seen it on Broadway yet?
Yes, I have.
Wasn't it amazing? Oh.
Incredible. I loved it so much. But I would love to reprise that role as an adult.
Once again, just proving throughout this interview that you are secretly a musical theater person. And
no, it's just at heart, it's true.
Lastly, this one's fun, I think, but maybe it's not fun for you. Let's say Mackenzie Scott gives the Hearth $5 million randomly. What do you do? Like, do you get a space, or is it just like producing 6 shows? What is it?
I think I don't want a space. That sounds so stressful. I would love to be able to give writers a lot more money and produce a lot more shows and frankly pay myself a little bit more so that I could dedicate more time to it and do more workshopping and more just general programming.
Love it. That's a very good, thoughtful answer. So Mackenzie Scott, if you're listening, the Hearth Theater Company, Julia Greer, you know, send that check.
We would use it well, I promise.
Well, Julia, it was the best chatting with you. I knew it would be when we met. And as I said before I started recording, we have all these friends in common, it turns out. So, I mean, that's testament to you and also to the Hearth. Is there anything that you feel like I've missed in our conversation or that you want to plug, like the upcoming show at the Hearth or anything you're doing, any projects?
I don't think so. I feel like you're such a good interviewer. I feel like Events at the Brick is the next thing, but otherwise we hit it all.
It was so great chatting with you. Thank you, Call Time listeners, as always. Thank you, Arts Journal listeners. I think next week I'm taking a week off from the podcast, but the next guest is going to be really exciting. She spoke in one of my classes at NYU, so you won't want to miss it, and have a great week.